interesting adventure by my friend, my homie, your benevolent king of New Orleans, Louisiana. He is Marcus Oswald. Sir. What's up, man? What up?
What it do, baby?
It do what it do. That's what it do.
Yeah, yes, yes. It's good. A lot of good shit going on in the past week. And the funny thing is last night when I was just kind of looking through stuff to talk about, things keep popping up. So there's just so much stuff going on.
Life keeps lifen.
Yeah, which is good for us, but it's just so much stuff. I'm like, can we even get to some of this shit? It's amazing.
Oh, we will. Oh, we will. Well, let's start with lifestyle, as we always do. And it sure seems like, Marcus, that everybody is starting to sing those sad songs and starting to bring flowers for the once just giant, just behemoth in the social media world. Just forget social media, the world.
Yeah.
People are predicting the imminent death and demise of Twitter.
It's amazing, isn't it? Isn't it incredible like this? And you're right, because Twitter has been this behemoth. It hasn't made a bunch of money, but there have been revolutions started and won because of Twitter. And this one knucklehead gets in and it goes to shit within a span of a couple of weeks. It's almost done. Like, I'm still shaking my head at this nonsense.
For the uninitiated, Elon Musk, whose name I will mention and mention once only, just to give context to what we're talking about here, this person bought Twitter for $44 billion and has predicted by many people, including myself, has run Twitter into the ground. He has fired or alienated, depending on which way you want to look at it, many people who have made Twitter the unstoppable force that it is, or I guess now was. Those people have been fired or run off. And now Twitter is basically running with a skeleton crew. And people in the know, trusted sources, have said that Twitter is now at this point running on fumes. And if something happens, if something goes wrong within the bowels of Twitter, if you will, there will be no one left to fix it, because the person whose name I will not mention that bought the company for $44 billion has run off all the has run off all the people who can fix it. He is, you know, in essence, brain drained his own company. So as we tape this on what is today, Friday morning, November 18th, people woke up this morning surprised, Marcus, that Twitter was still around. but that has still not stopped the number of people who are under the impression that Twitter might not make it through the weekend. I am not that pessimistic about it. I think Twitter is going to continue. There's going to be something of a catastrophic nature that happens.
Yeah.
But I don't think Twitter will cease to exist as we know it. It's too valuable, even though it doesn't make any money, and it's definitely not worth $44 billion with that asshole paid for it.
Yeah.
Twitter is too valuable of a resource to the globe for it to just be driven into the ground by one megalomaniacal, lightly educated idiot.
Yep. That's what it is. I think that, it just going back over this whole thing, the timeline of this whole mess, it's so apparently all this stuff is because he's leveraged so much of his Tesla stock into the purchase of Twitter. And so I was reading yesterday that he has to come up with like $1.5 billion a year to pay for this company. And apparently Twitter's never made anywhere near close to that in a single year. Just in general revenue. We're not talking profit. In revenue, they've never made that.
Right.
So his whole idea was, okay, well, this is why he's doing all this stupid shit, like, you know, cutting the workforce and the $8 blue check verification bullshit. It's all stupid decisions. Like, none of those things are going to help him make money. Not enough to bring in more than $1 billion a year in revenue to keep Twitter alive, at least as we know it. He's gonna have to sell it, or he's gonna have to go bankrupt, and maybe even both. I just don't see a way out of it.
Well, here's the thing, though, and this is what we should really be paying attention to. Elon Musk, damn it, I said his name. The person whose name I just said, and I didn't mean to say, didn't buy Twitter on his own. You know who helped him buy Twitter? The Saudis.
Oh,
The Saudis
yes, that's
helped him
right.
buy Twitter.
Yeah.
I believe people who are very high up in the Chinese government, they helped him buy Twitter, but particularly and specifically, the Saudis helped bankroll this dope's $44 billion purchase of Twitter. And you know who would love to get themselves a very, very important social media site that they can control and control alone? The Saudis, who have had a bit of a public relations problem here over the past, when did 9/11 happen? 22 years ago, the Saudi royal family has had a PR problem for the past 2 decades and counting, and they found themselves a useful idiot in the person whose name I will not mention, who is doing their bidding by running this social media service into the ground because some people dare question his intelligence or lack of intelligence, and some people make fun of him. He's okay with running it into the ground, and so are the Saudis because now they will be in control of this very powerful and very popular social media site, and they can then start to do some whitewashing of their own public crimes. And that ain't no conspiracy, people. Them's the facts.
And I think that would actually hasten the fall of Twitter, at least again as we know it, because you want to talk about some censorship. That's the irony, right? Elon talks about how he's going to make this thing free speech bastion and blah blah blah. Well, you got some guys working with you who don't give a damn about any of that shit.
And the Saudis are more than happy to give the person whose name I will not mention money that he desperately needs. They will be more than happy to give him money for him to crater this site for their own intents and purposes.
Here's the question. How long will it be before Elon Musk is no longer the richest man in the world? I think that day is coming very, very quickly. Very, very quickly.
Can't come soon enough, but even if he's not the richest man in the world, he's still going to be one of the richest people on the planet. So.
And the question is, can he make a comeback out of all this?
Hey, what we need him to do is get married and then old girl take all his money. You know what I mean? That's what we need.
So, dude, did you hear? Like, this is crazy. So apparently, there's some stories that Elon, and this is from a reporter. A reporter actually did this. Remember the story came out that he had like these twins, these secret twins. That
Yeah,
not.
yeah, yeah.
So the woman who wrote that story, God, I can't remember the magazine, but I watched her talking about it yesterday. The woman who wrote that original story about him having the secret twins has talked about the probability that Elon Musk has other kids, and not just him, but other big time Silicon Valley tech moguls having a bunch of different kids
Yeah.
all over the place.
Yeah.
Because, get this shit, because they believe that there aren't enough children being had who have the intelligence to move the species forward. So these nerds are having a bunch of kids because they think it's going to save the species and keep like the human race smart. There aren't enough brilliant minds who will be able to continue to move the human race forward.
Now, see, I don't even think it's that, I don't even think it's that high-minded. I think it's real easy, it's real simple, it's real base. Billionaires like to fuck too. Hey man, it ain't just Nick Cannon and rappers that like to go out there and just have relations with no protection. Like I can pay for these kids, I don't care. Billionaires freaky deaky too. So yeah, there might be a couple of these clowns who overestimate their intelligence and think they're playing four-dimensional chess. Like, yes, I'll just spread my seed around and I'll populate the world with more intelligent beings. Yeah, you might have a couple of these weirdos think that, but I guarantee you, and I'm big on Occam's razor. I'm big on the simplest explanation. To me, billionaires, they nasty too.
Oh,
Jeff
yeah.
Bezos, nasty, 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 nasty. Bill Gates, because listen, what have we found out about these two? We thought Bill Gates was a nerd. Then we found out that Bill Gates is out there real nasty out there in these streets, you know, cheating on his wife, talking about, let me do this, let me do that. You know, like he an R&B singer from the 90s. We found out that Jeff Bezos, once he got some money, looked in the mirror and like, I'm terrible. All of a sudden, that guy starts taking HGH, start lifting weights, shaved his head. Now he looks like a goddamn Bond villain. And what is he doing now? He out there dipping his wick in old girl who was, I think, like a TV reporter or TV anchor somewhere in LA. Now, you might have some true nerds out there, but for the most part, they're still dudes. And now they're rich dudes. And you know what rich dudes like to do and have been doing since the beginning of time? Fucking. That's what these guys are doing.
What's the point of them dudes even getting married? Like, why even pretend? It doesn't make any sense to me.
No, you're right about that. I mean, but, you know, marriage is an institution that's old as time. I mean, you know, it's why does anybody get married?
I can see, like, the average dude. But why are these dudes? There's no reason in the world for them to get married. Not because of anything other than the fact that none of them are ever going to stay faithful. What did Chris Rock say? Men are only as faithful as their options. There is a kernel of truth to that, especially when you are a multi-millionaire billionaire.
Sure.
So, like, why waste everybody's time? Just go ahead and fuck around. Because trust me, nobody will mind. You don't have to pretend like you want to just be a woman. None of these women will mind. You got the paper. They'll be there for you. Why play?
You're right about that. And what happened? All of these guys eventually ended up getting divorced.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the thing about it is once you get to a certain amount of money, you know, you just like, what's the joke is, you know, why is divorce so expensive? Because it's worth it. Well, if you have the money to justify that expense, you're like, you know what? If it don't work, that's fine. I'll give her half of $50 billion.
Oof.
No problem. Oof. No problem.
Oof. God, that hurts.
You know what, my brother, I lost you right. It hurts my feelings. You there?
Oh, I'm here. Did you?
Okay.
Did I crap out on you?
Yeah. It said, it hurts my feelings, and then I lost it.
Okay, yeah, I'll edit that if there's some silence there.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I still think these dudes are nerds. I don't care how much money.
For sure.
I don't care how much money you got. They're nerds.
For sure.
That's why I don't. None of these people scare me. None of these people bother me. I understand that they're dangerous because of the money they have and the power they have, but. People are nerds.
Yeah.
Absolute nerds.
I mean, there's no bigger nerd than this dude, Musk. And we're finding out more and more about him. I guess all of his degrees are fake. He never had a physics degree, apparently. This shit is all coming out now. But we kind of already knew he was an idiot. We already knew he was dumb.
There's not enough people who know that. And there's not enough people who, when presented with anecdotal evidence that he is an idiot, believe that he's an idiot. The man... Cult of Personality. It's not just a great song by Living Color.
Yep.
It's a great song by Living Color because Cult of Personality is absolutely true and real.
Facts.
And
dude.
He is the latest example of Cult of Personality.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how this thing all turns out, but I am watching it all breathlessly.
Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Quality Hang Pod or simply at Quality Hang.
Right. While you still can.
Yeah. Let's get to the world of sports. What you got, my brother?
Well, I'm just thinking about the slow start the Golden State Warriors have gotten off to. To me, this is the biggest story in the NBA, the fact the Warriors have gotten off to such a slow start. I know that I've heard a couple of pundits talk about, well, the Warriors should trade for Kevin Durant, which I don't think solves any of the problems that they have at all. But you look at – it's primarily the defense. They're not stopping anybody. Are not stopping anybody. I mean, I watched these dudes the other night, and I was aghast at some of the stuff I saw. I mean, the transition defense has been brutal. I literally watched the Warriors score, and then I watched Jermichael Green just watch dude run right by him, race to the bucket, and dunk right off a made basket. It was insane. I'm like, what are these dudes doing? I don't know if this is a Steve Kerr thing. I doubt that it is. I know some people have talked about how it's Draymond Green's fault. I doubt that it. That's
no,
it.
No.
I just think that this is a bunch of new dudes who don't know each other. There's no real veterans in prominent positions after you get past, you know, the top six or seven, Kevon Looney and Jordan Poole. It's just a bunch of dudes. It's just a bunch of dudes. And defense is the hallmark of this team, no matter what you think about their offense.
Yep.
Defense is how they won those championships, and they don't have it.
Yep. It's kind of a, not necessarily complicated, but it is a multifaceted problem. You are right, A number one, Marcus. The problem with the Warriors is their defense, their lack of commitment to defensive principles and ideals that have made the Warriors a dynastic team over these last few years. A lack of understanding what they want to do fundamentally, defensively. They are just not as serious about it. And Steve Kerr said this after a game a few days ago, another loss, another bad loss on the road in Phoenix, that they were playing the Warriors Drew League basketball.
Yep.
If you know basketball, you know that that's an insult, because that the Drew League is just about getting shots up and offense. No one plays defense. Yep. It's like an all-star game that's not on television. Steve Kerr said that's the type of basketball that the Warriors are playing right now in the regular season. And he's 100% right. But why are the Warriors having these defensive problems? You're correct. Remove Draymond Green from this equation, okay? What Draymond Green has shown post-punching Jordan Poole in the face is that Draymond Green is a very, very important and valuable member of the Warriors because of what he does defensively. Mm-hmm. Now, this is where it starts to get complicated, and this is where you start to have you got to start to speak some facts and say some harsh things about people, one person in particular that you like. But before I do that, the Warriors have tried a two-timeline approach, as they call it, which is integrating young guys like James Wiseman, Moses Moody, and Jordan Poole, integrating them with the stalwarts, the veterans, Steph, Clay, and Draymond. Yep. That two-timeline approach, the young guys, they have not come up to speed yet. Mm-hmm. A lot of it has to do with defense. In Jordan Poole's case, he's off offensively. That's kind of a different story for a different time. James Wiseman, he's now in the G League. He's back in the developmental league. His ascendance has not happened as quickly as many people thought that it would. But speaking of defense and sticking with that, those three guys and others just have not gotten the job done defensively. Yeah. So while Steph Curry is having an MVP type year and looking as good as he has ever looked, and while the Warriors are scoring, their lack of attention to detail and their lack of defense, of attention to detail, is absolutely killing them.
Yep.
Now, you notice I haven't mentioned one person's name. Mm. And that one person is Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
Klay Thompson right now, okay? Now, I don't know what it's going to be in the future, but right now, Klay Thompson's cooked. He's cooked.
He's not playing well at all.
Klay Thompson is cooked. He's taking terrible, terrible shots because he's in a terrible, terrible slump. And we've seen Klay struggle offensively at the beginning of seasons before.
Yeah.
But we've never seen Klay Thompson struggle offensively at the beginning of seasons before, coming off of two significant injuries. Yeah. And the injuries are a thing. And I don't know why he didn't play in the offseason following winning a championship again. I don't know if that's a decision Klay made. I don't know if it's a decision the Warriors made. I don't know if it's a decision the Warriors made and told Klay, this is what you have to do.
Well, Klay decided he didn't want to play during the summer because he was scared of getting hurt.
All right. Okay. So that's the case.
Yep.
Klay Thompson right now looks awful. He looks awful offensively, and he is getting cooked defensively. All right. And no one wants to say it because everybody likes Klay.
Well, I think everybody's saying it.
Charles Barkley said it, and everybody got on Charles Barkley, who I know makes it easy to get on him, but he was 100% right. Klay Thompson right now is not good. And here's the thing. You know, Klay said this, and other people are saying, well, you know, the guy just can't, he's coming back from two injuries that are devastating. Klay Thompson right now in the middle of November looks worse than he did when the Warriors were winning a championship in June.
Yeah, absolutely.
What the hell happened? It'd be different if Klay Thompson looked badly in the playoffs, the 6 weeks of the playoffs, leading to the Warriors winning another championship that he was a part of. It would be different if he looked horrible then. He didn't look like the Klay of old, but he didn't look like old Klay.
Yeah.
Now you watch Klay Thompson, he does not look like the Klay of old. He looks like old Klay Thompson. What happened between the middle of June and the middle of November?
I heard Steve Kerr talk about this on a local radio station yesterday. He does a long interview every week. And that was one of the specific topics that was brought up. And he talked about Klay extensively. And he just said, listen, I mean, the two big problems with Klay are that, and I have no reason to believe that, you know, Steve Kerr is going to lie about it, but the two big problems with Klay are that he didn't play ball at all, basically until he got to camp. So that put him about 2 months behind everybody else in the league. And he's trying to catch up. He didn't have his wind or any of that stuff when he came to the league. So he's trying to catch up. And he said the other thing is that Klay is rushing everything. And it's true. Mm-hmm. You could see, if you know, when you shoot your jumper, you're short. He definitely doesn't seem to have his legs underneath him because all of his shots seem to be short. They all seem to hit off the front of the rim. And so that might be part of it. But the other part is just trying to rush shots and prove everybody wrong. And I never thought about this before, but he said that Klay, unlike any of the other players on that team, he is the one who gets into his head the most.
Sure.
Draymond, Steph, Iguodala, Kevon, all those guys who have been here, he said that Klay is the one who tends to get in his head the most about his offense. And he said if his offense isn't going well, it can start to affect his defense. So you got a guy who didn't play ball at all, who's trying to physically catch up to everybody, and he's in his head because of his shot, and that's fucking with his defense overall.
But see, here's the problem with that. And everything you said is absolutely true. We can't have that. You've been in the game way too long for that to be a problem.
Oh,
your shot's going to fall at some point in time because you are one of the greatest shooters in the history of humankind. Mm-hmm. Defensively, he can't stay in front of anyone. And I doubt seriously, Marcus, and this is where I'm like, we have to have this discussion about Klay looking like old Klay Thompson, and I don't mean that in a good way.
Yeah.
He's a traffic cone out there. And they played Phoenix a couple of nights ago.
Yeah.
Devin Booker went at him again. Guys were going at him repeatedly to the point where when he was guarding Devin Booker, once Devin Booker got across the half court line, they sent a double team. They blitzed Devin Booker to help out Klay Thompson, who was and will be. Even if he decides to stop playing basketball tomorrow, Klay Thompson is going to be known as one of the best on-ball defenders of all time. But we're watching right now Klay Thompson needing help desperately.
Yeah.
50 feet away from the basket, needing help to guard guys.
Yeah.
To me, that's got nothing to do, or should have nothing to do, with your shot not falling. That has to do everything with, hey, man, the dude we saw in June who didn't need a double team to help him guard anybody, helping the Warriors win the finals, the dude we saw in June is gone. This guy we're watching right now is hurting his team. And the legitimate discussion of should Jordan Poole start and have Klay come off the bench until he figures it out, that legitimate discussion, we shouldn't even be having this discussion. Jordan Poole should be starting, and Klay Thompson needs to come off the bench because he is actively hurting this team along with other people.
I've heard people talk about that. I don't think that's the right move. I don't think putting
Jordan. Then what do? You let him continue to go out there and hurt the team on both ends of the court?
Yeah, because Jordan Poole coming in as a starter, the problem isn't the starting unit of the Warriors. The problem
I understand
is,
that.
So if you take off literally the only person who can score on that second unit, a unit that already has a no scoring at all. Klay is not a guy who can score on his own. He can't create his own shot. And if his defense is not good, what is he doing for you? You want to put him on a second unit that's already trash? That's not helpful at all.
But see, here's my thing about that. He's not seeing the best player, the best guard, or the best wing that he has to defend when he's playing with the second unit. And he's able to get up more shots instead of him taking bad shots and taking away shots from, let's just say, Poole is open, or let's just say Steph is open, or anybody else is open out there on the court with him. He's taking bad shots. That means bad things for that team. If he's with the second unit, he's able to take those shots, and they aren't as, if they don't go down, they aren't as damaging.
Oh, but see, I disagree. I think it's even more damaging because you now have not a single person in that second unit who is capable of scoring on their own. Klay has never been a guy who can give me the ball, let me take it to the hole, or let me shoot it over you. That's not what he can do. And the second unit needs to have at least one person who can do that. The only person on that team, on the team, other than Steph Curry, who can do that is Jordan Poole. I don't think that helps the Warriors in any way, shape, or form. I think, like, it's easy to point out at Klay, but the fact is, there are so many other problems with this team that are bigger than Klay Thompson.
But to me, putting Klay with the second unit is, it hopefully will fix two problems. It will fix Klay's problems, and it will fix Jordan Poole's problems, because Jordan Poole coming off the bench, that's not working for him either. But when we saw Jordan Poole, I forget the game a few nights ago where he started, he looked like Jordan Poole from the finals.
Yeah, this but is you
not,
know what?
This is not.
The dude is getting $130 million a year. You need to be playing well no matter when we put you in. That's bullshit.
But we can say the same thing about Klay Thompson. Hey, man, you getting paid X amount of money for a year. You need to go out there and play well, or at least look like the guy we saw in the spring and early summer.
I agree 100%. So I'm saying to you, from a strategic standpoint, from a winning standpoint, it helps no one to put Klay Thompson with that second unit when that second unit is already trash.
But the way they're playing right now is not helping anyone either.
So what's going to change? You're going to score more points? I mean, it's not going to help anybody.
I'm trying to get two guys going that are integral to the Warriors. Forget about winning a championship, that are integral to the Warriors winning games on a consistent basis in the regular season. I'm trying to get two guys going who are having problems. And if the way that things are going right now isn't getting the job done, you got to try something.
I would say try something. I just don't think that switching Jordan Poole and Klay Thompson helps a single solitary thing.
So what do you try?
I think they're doing the right things. You got to just try different combinations of that second unit, and you got to start figuring out a way to get that defense tight, because it doesn't matter if Jordan Poole
– listen, he's a key to your defense. The reason that guys are getting to the rack is that the fact that Klay can't stay in front of anybody.
No, their top five are doing well. It's when Steph leaves the game, and when Steph is not playing, or when Draymond is not playing, that thing goes haywire.
I'm talking defensively. To get to the number one problem with the Warriors, which is their defense.
I am talking about
their best defender, not named, their best perimeter defender is Klay Thompson. And their best perimeter defender, Klay Thompson, is being attacked on the regular. Well, now
it's Andrew Wiggins.
Okay, but Andrew Wiggins by himself is not getting the job done. This is not a slam on Andrew Wiggins. It has to be Andrew Wiggins and Klay Thompson. And when the Warriors were at their best, Klay Thompson was their best on-ball perimeter defender. When they got Andrew Wiggins, that was just like that's like finding $20 in your pants pocket. When you do lunch, you're like, holy shit, he can defend too, and he's willing to do it, and he's good at it.
Here's the problem. If the problem is defense, how is that help? If Klay's not playing good defense and Jordan Poole is a terrible defensive player, where is the defense improving by switching either of those guys?
Okay, but if Klay is not playing good defense right now, you switch him out for Jordan Poole, who is not the defender that you would like for him to be or need him to be, but he's out there with Andrew Wiggins. And if you could just turn the screws a little bit more with Poole defensively, I think that's better than what you're getting out of Klay right now, which is, well, the same as you're getting out of Jordan Poole right now defensively, nothing. And you said yourself, you think that Klay's defense is being hampered by him focusing on his offense and the ball not going down. Well, if he's with the second unit and he's able to get those shots that make more sense because he is hunting for his shot, and if those shots go down, maybe that defense gets a little bit better and that second unit improves in that regard. Or at least when he's with the second unit, his lack of defensive prowess, Klay's, for whatever reason, isn't that big of a hindrance to what the Warriors are trying to do, because he's running with the second unit and ostensibly seeing the second unit's of the opponents that they're playing on a given basis, night in, night out.
See, I don't think that helps their problem. I think even if Klay starts
I'm just trying to help the Klay Thompson problem more than anything.
Yeah, and I don't think Klay Thompson is the biggest problem on the team. That's why I'm like, eh, I don't care what they're doing. They've
but
got
if their
far
defense
bigger issues.
Is the biggest problem, and Klay is a key part of your defense, I'm not singling out Klay to make this about him. I'm trying to get a guy who you have to have if you're going to get into the playoffs and get deep into the playoffs. You've got to get this guy going. And I know they still have plenty of time because it's the middle of November. But what we've – he looks worse than he did last spring. And
granted,
last spring wasn't that long ago.
Granted.
What the hell is going on?
Here's the problem, though, Rod. Even if Klay Thompson was playing great defense right now, they would still suck because they can't. It's just that second unit is trash. They cannot stop it. As soon as those guys come in that game, you see leads disappear.
No, you're right about the second unit being trash.
I don't think that Klay playing better defense or even shooting better solves a single of their issues.
So
this
how
is what
do
I
you
mean.
Fix the second unit problem?
I've been saying this since the start. I don't know if you can. I don't know if you can fix it.
But
if
you're gonna have to.
No, you could just end up being like a team that wins 37 games.
No, that's
Steph Curry scoring 35 points a game.
Nah.
These guys, if they can't
Steph will punch somebody in the mouth before he let that happen.
If they can't get Jamichael Green, who was brought in for his defensive prowess, and he's been awful. Yep. If they can't get him going, if they don't get Andre Iguodala back on the court and have him productive. If they don't get James Wiseman, if they don't get Kuminga and Moody and those guys.
I forgot about Kuminga.
If they don't get these guys playing well, it doesn't matter where you put Klay Thompson. Because this is not a 5 or 6 man team. When you play teams that are good, you're going to get your ass handed to you because no matter where you put Klay, you're still going to give up 130. These dudes are giving up 75 points and a half, man. That's not a one. Well, let's just switch this guy, and then all of a sudden things will improve. I think that this is going to be a year-long problem, because the other thing that people haven't talked about, which is I think should be mentioned more, is you have essentially five guys who aren't really steeped in this particular system.
Yes.
And I know that when Kerr first got to the team, he talked about how this is not an easy system. And it typically takes people 2 years to really feel comfortable in it. And so and he ended up being prophetic because his first year with the Warriors, they won the championship. But the second year, they won 73 games. And so I think that that's another of the problems. You have these young guys who aren't vets, Kuminga, Moody, Wiseman, who aren't picking this system up. Wiseman is, oh my God, Wiseman is a dumpster fire. You're talking about the guy who literally has the worst plus minus in all of the NBA. The other day, the Warriors blew out the San Antonio Spurs. The only player on the team who had a negative plus minus was James Wiseman. I want him to do well, obviously. I hope he turns it around. He's a young dude. But this dude is murdering you.
No, you're right about that. He is not playing well. But the Warriors got kicked by the Suns a couple of nights ago, and James Wiseman wasn't even in the state of Arizona.
Because the Suns are a much better team right now, and they are a team. They're guys who've been together for a while. They won 60 games last year. They were in the finals the year prior to that. These dudes, that's a good team. Like, I don't think much. Like, I don't think the Suns are going to win a title. I think they're a paper tiger, but they're still in the regular season. They're still going to win games. And when you got a team of essentially a 5-man team playing against a well-oiled machine like those guys, you could expect to get your ass kicked. But they score points. They score points. They can't stop anybody. I'm not worried about how many points they score. They need to figure out a way to play some defense. And if every time Steph goes out, or if every time you get past that first five and you bring in those young guys and all of a sudden a 12-point lead evaporates in a matter of 2 minutes, you've got problems that cannot be fixed until those dudes get their shit together. And I don't know if they can do it.
What if you had a once elite defender who is desperate to get back to some semblance of defensive relevance on that second unit to help stop the bleeding when the second unit comes in.
It's
What if
more
that
than
guy's
one.
initials were KT?
It's more than
What
one.
if his name rhymes with Slay Rompsrun?
This has been folks' favorite topic, but I feel like this is one of those things where people aren't really seeing the big picture.
No,
This dude
I think
is not going to be the savior of this Golden State Warriors team.
I'm not saying he's got to be the savior. What I'm saying is that you're not going to get where you want to be, where you weren't, not that where you were, he tried to say not that long ago, if a guy who you have to have is looking as bad as he's looking right now.
Or as bad as all those guys look. We're not talking about just a one-man
Yeah,
thing.
but he's different though, because
He's
he's
different because he's
Klay.
Klay
He's
Thompson,
been
but
through it. He knows how to
yeah.
do it. And you're seeing the guy. He is one of the guys who is actively hurting you.
Yeah.
Actively. And the other guys, there's an excuse. It's not a good one. It's an excuse.
Yeah,
James
but
Wiseman has played a handful of basketball games. Jonathan Kuminga is a 19, 20-year-old kid who's in his own head. And Steve Kerr doesn't trust, because he doesn't trust him to do the right thing out there. I was expecting more from Moses Moody. I got to tell you that. But he's still a young kid. You know, Jordan Poole, I don't know. I don't get it. I don't know if it's punch related. I don't think it is. I don't know. But Klay Thompson, it's my point is, he looks observably worse now in the middle of November than he did less than 6 months ago.
I don't disagree with that at all. I'm just
What
saying that it's
happened,
not.
and how do we fix it? Because they're not going to get where they want to go if he is playing like this, and
Listen.
he's only gotten worse since the season started.
Listen. And this is what I mean when I say people aren't focusing on the big picture. Everybody's like, "Oh, it's Klay, it's Klay." Like, if Klay Thompson was playing like an all-star, they would still be getting their asses kicked. Period. They would still be getting their asses kicked because they can't stop a single soul. Unless you're off.
If he's play, yeah, Alexa, shut up. If he's playing like an all, what does Alexa have to say about this?
I
I
hate
disagree with
that
that. That's why I put that hoe in my house. Telling Jeff Bezos all my
bitch.
dirty little secrets. Now, if he's playing like an all-star, the Warriors don't look as bad as they do. I disagree with that. And my whole point is not to put this on Klay Thompson. My whole point is those other guys, I don't know what their deal is. And those other guys, while they are very important to the Warriors' success now and in the future, if we're talking about the absolute present, I have an expectation from a guy like Klay Thompson, not because of what I saw from him 2 years ago when he had an undisturbed Achilles and an undisturbed ACL. This is a guy who in the spring and early summer looked like a serviceable basketball player. Right now, he don't look that way. That's my main concern.
And I don't disagree with that concern. I'm just saying it's in big picture. It's a bigger problem than just having Klay Thompson look bad. Like, it's a much bigger problem than have, if you still got those dudes, you
But I'm
still have
looking at
that.
certain details of the big picture, and that's the one detail that jumps out
Yeah,
at me.
it's a major detail, but like I said, I looking at all these guys, this is not a team that's connected defensively. And
No, no.
Klay Thompson, even at all-star level, it's not helping. Those dudes are getting blasted every place, everywhere. The team defense, it's not even the man-to-man defense, it's the team defense that is the major problem.
But a big part of their team defense is that you used to be able to sick Klay on whoever was doing it on the perimeter, and then everybody else could handle their guy. Draymond could be Draymond. Steph would then be able to play his brand of defense that has gotten better over the last few years. He would be able to be aggressive getting steals, or he would be able to play help defense. They counted on James Wiseman to be that guy at the rim that would be the last line of defense. That hasn't happened. I think that has definitely put a crimp in their defensive plans. But when they were really cooking, and you're right, they were connected, they were intelligent, they were ferocious defensively. But it started with Klay, go guard that wing. Klay, go guard that two guard. And two guards are the most dangerous players in the NBA today. Pardon the pun.
If the implication is that, well, if Klay's playing better defense and all of a sudden everybody's better, nah, that's insane
No,
talk.
I'm not saying that everybody's better. What I'm saying is that that's a fundamental linchpin of their defense, is that they could put one guy on the most dangerous player on the court nowadays, which is either a two guard or a wing, and go, we know you can handle him. We will handle our own individual assignments. That is a fundamental linchpin of their defense, flat out.
Yeah, but watching these guys, dude, there's it's there's it's really tough to watch.
Oh,
Nobody,
yeah.
no, listen, this is what I say all the time. If your point guard is your leading rebounder, you're not winning. And the fact that Steph Curry is a leading rebounder in the
That's
Golden
a
State
problem.
Warriors,
That's a
that's
problem.
right. And that's where are your defensive rebounds? Why are you getting up? Why are teams giving up getting so many second chance shots?
Yeah, that's a
Why
problem.
are you getting beaten transition defense every time that, like, this is such a team-wide problem. And I think if I was coaching this team, my focus wouldn't be on, well, what are we gonna what all we gotta do is get Klay going. Nah,
No, no, no,
there's
no.
shit
That
going.
would be coaching malpractice if Steve
Right.
Kerr did that. I'm just the guy sitting here talking about it based on what I observe. So no,
Right.
I'm not saying that that should be his number one focus. What I'm saying is that for them to start to get back to where they need to be and where they have been defensively, their number one fundamental linchpin of their defense has got to get back to where he was, or at least a close enough approximation to what we saw in the spring, which is they could sic their best perimeter defender on the opposing team's best perimeter player and go, we know you got him. We'll take care of everything else.
You
Because
know who
when
did
that
that
breaks
job last
down,
year?
that Andrew Wiggins.
And he was good at it.
Yeah, but you still need Klay Thompson to be a part of that. And he was a part of that in the spring. Andrew Wiggins took over. And like I said, I think that was found money. But you still need him to be a part of that. When he is a zero in that category, what they try to do defensively from the top. From the top of the key, from the top of the 3-point line on back, what they try to do defensively doesn't work if they have to send a double team to help him out when he's guarding, as he was a couple of nights ago, Devin Booker. When they got to blitz Devin Booker to help out Klay Thompson, and you have nothing on the back end as far as rim protection, you got no James Wiseman back there to help you out defensively, you're cooked. What you're trying to do and what you have done doesn't work. Because you now have to make a fundamental change, which is we have to help a guy who never needed help. And we have to help him 35 feet from the basket.
Yeah, I mean, there's some merit to that, but I also feel like that is, I think they can live without Klay Thompson being their best defender. I mean, listen, they
They can't
were,
live with him being their worst.
well, they can't live with, no, they can't live with this team being as bad as they are defensively, top to bottom. Last year is a perfect example. They didn't have Klay for most of the season. They were still a top two defensive team without Klay Thompson. So it's not just a matter of having Klay. This is my point. It's not
They
just
also
Klay.
had Gary Payton the second.
Exactly. This is what I'm saying. You had a team defense of guys who knew how to play defense and were connected. So they didn't need Klay Thompson to be a great defender. They needed guys who could play fucking defense as a team. None of these guys can do it. You just watch them. It doesn't matter. It's not a one player thing. All these guys are awful.
Yeah. Well, when you look as bad as they've looked, and when you're 0 for
Awful.
on the road, and when you got the Sacramento Kings flossing and flexing on you, that's an everybody problem, not just a one guy problem. Because right
Chuck.
now, right now, Sacramento Kings fans are getting real lippy here in
Shout out to
California. With
Mike Brown. Shout out to Mike
absolutely,
Brown.
shout out to Mike Brown, one of my favorite people. Hey,
Shout out to
listen,
Mike.
with the Lakers having their issues.
Yep.
And the Warriors having their issues. Yo, man, Kings fans walking around here real chesty,
By the
right?
way, I don't want to sound too much, get too much into panic mode. It's only like 14 games in the season, so who the fuck knows what's going to happen, 6 months down the line. But I just think that if they don't get these, they might have to trade somebody and
Oh,
bring in some vets.
yeah. No, they're gonna
Who
have to trade
knows?
somebody. If this
Who
keeps
knows?
going at its current pace, they're gonna have to trade Kuminga and or Wiseman, Moody. I think any of these young guys, Jordan Poole, I think, is somewhat untouchable, but who knows?
He's safe, but if the right deal comes along,
that's what I'm saying. Somewhat untouchable for her, who knows? They're going to have to make some moves. Ultimately, that's what it boils down to. They can't keep going with this current group if this current group keeps playing at its current pace. So, yes, moves do seem to be on the horizon. That's for damn sure. Non-Warrior fans have just rolled their eyes at this. All right, let's get into pop culture, shall we? What you got, my man?
Wow. So, you know, Wakanda Weekend was last week.
And Wakanda Weekend.
And of course, the movie did phenomenal. I went to see it. I loved it. It's long. Loved it. I actually feel like it might be a little bit better than the first one.
Ooh.
But there is a very vocal contingent of people who are complaining that this is more of the MCU. And basically, they're talking. I've seen a few women get on here talking about, you know, I don't buy this whole Black Panther thing. This movie emasculates Black men. Where are the men in this film? I'm sure you know by now that.
Are we giving away spoilers here?
No, I mean, okay. At this point, everybody knows that the women are essentially in charge of Wakanda, and they're the fighters. They're the people who are the toughest, the baddest, and so they were like. This emasculates Black men. I can't believe there are no Black men. This is just further proof that mainstream America is trying to emasculate Black men. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Were these Black women saying this?
Yes.
Oh.
Black women and...
Oh, Jesus.
And some nerds. Just, you know, the alpha male dudes. And I'm like, what are y'all talking about? What the fuck are y'all talking about? So let me get this straight. You can't believe, that was the thing. I can't believe that that these skinny women can take on these big old guys. I can't believe it. But you can believe that a motherfucker can turn green and get to be 7 feet tall. And you can believe that, you know, Thanos can snap his fingers and turn people. All that stuff is believable, but you can't believe that these women could be great fighters. It's
motherfucker, you
insane.
Believe a fish man came out of the ocean to threaten a place that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You suspended disbelief as soon as you bought that ticket off of Fandango.com. Shut up. Shut your trap.
It's like, what are we doing, Rod? Like, can we not have fun anymore?
No.
I think we've
clearly.
We've gotten to the point where too many people feel like they are social commenters, much like we do, and can just feel like, well, everything needs to have some kind of analysis. There's a conspiracy behind everything. You know what? Sometimes the fact is we're just having fun. It's fine.
I mean, a Black man made the movie.
Yeah,
it's a labor of love. He made the movie, wrote it. He did all that in the face of his friend, the star of the movie, Black Panther, Chadwick Boseman, dying. By all accounts of you and other people have said, Ryan Coogler did an absolutely amazing job with the movie and did an absolutely amazing job of honoring Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah.
And you got the nerve to say that Ryan Coogler, a Black man, engaged in some nefarious emasculation of Black men. Shut up.
It just
gets
old.
See, this is why Twitter should die. Come on, man. Jesus Christ. The guy, by all accounts, did the impossible, which is make a movie that was entertaining. Was in keeping with the third phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which has been very female heavy, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Nope.
And Coogler did right, you know, by Chadwick Boseman and his fans, the two of us included, amongst millions around the world, and his family. Like, that's what?
I just feel like we've gotten to the. We've gotten to the point where nobody can just relax and have a good time.
Well, that's for damn sure.
My God, does everything need to be, you know, turned into this think piece about what the effect that it has on mainstream population and on people and blah, 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 and society, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes a motherfucker just want to go to a movie and watch some people get into a fight and see some magic tricks on the screen. Like, why do we have to turn it into all this other bullshit?
I don't know. I don't know. I just don't.
I actually believe that the internet is plays a huge role in this
Oh,
because
sure, of course.
obviously everybody has their opinions, and now everybody thinks, like, I listen to people give reviews of stuff, and I hear so many people say shit, talk about, like, character arcs in the story, and like, none of you knows what the fuck that means. Like, none of you guys took a creative writing course or a screenwriting class. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You're using some words you heard some professionals say, and you think you know what it means. Like, none of y'all knows what the fuck you're talking about. It's such an annoying thing now with citizen reviews. Just say, did you like it? Yeah, I liked it, because this was good. I liked this part. Remember when you were a kid? This is good, because I remember this part, and I remember that part, and that's what it was. You went to see it because your friend told you there were some good parts in the movie, and you went and watched, and you had a good time.
You know, a lot of people didn't read the comic books. I grew up reading the comic books.
Yeah.
Not just Marvel, but DC too.
Yeah.
And I think when you have an appreciation for the art that came before the movies, specifically Marvel movies.
Yeah.
Put it this way, I have suspended disbelief when it comes to Marvel characters. I've done that for decades.
Right.
So it's not that hard for me to continue to suspend disbelief when I see these comic books come to life, comic book characters come to life
right
on screen. I think for a lot of people, there are many more people who know of the Marvel universe via the movies, because movies are more popular than comic books, who know the Marvel characters through movies than they do through the comic books. But the comic books, I think, it doesn't make me a better fan, doesn't make me a deeper fan, but I think you get a deeper understanding of the characters, where they come from, how they were created. It's almost more tangible. It's almost more accessible in comic book form. On the screen, you just kind of sit there and just open up your eyes Clockwork Orange style and let all the CGI seep into your brain, you know, through your eyeballs. And I think because it seems so almost easy and flippant on screen, you come up with these sort of easy flippant. He tried to. We're recording this in the morning. flippant ideas that, well, this can't be real, or that wouldn't have happened. Like,
yeah,
it's a comic book come to life.
Yeah,
what do you? Just because you see real people acting out these comic book storylines, that doesn't mean that these are real people storylines. What are you talking about?
Yeah, like the people who get mad at the black elves.
Like, yeah,
come on. What really?
Yeah. It's just, I mean, you know, listen, the movie can't be universal. There always has to be some jerk off or jerk offs who go, I see a flaw in it that no one else can see.
Yeah. You wanted to talk about the Ticketmaster issue.
Yeah, man. Ticketmaster, the evil corporate ticket behemoth, they are now in the fight of their lives. See, back in the day, Pearl Jam thought that they could take down Ticketmaster, and Pearl Jam, one of my favorite bands, found out that, nah, son, Ticketmaster, Ticketmaster's like Thanos, baby. You should have gone for the head. They didn't do that, and Ticketmaster still lives to this day. Well, I think Ticketmaster will have found Marcus's greatest challenge, and that challenge, teenage girls.
Who knew?
Because, well, if you have a teenage girl, you already know. Taylor Swift, the inexplicably popular Taylor Swift, is going on a massive tour of U.S., not arenas, stadiums, football stadiums, like Levi Stadium in the Bay Area, MetLife Stadium in New York, and all of the giant football stadiums in between here in the United States of America. Taylor Swift is going on a tour, and if you want to buy tickets, the only game in town is Ticketmaster, because they are a monopoly.
Yes,
well,
sir.
Ticketmaster, its ticket delivery system fell under the crushing weight of the Swifties, and the Swifties are mad. And they, Swifties, along with other people, are asking questions. Why can't Ticketmaster handle selling tickets for Taylor Swift? And also, well, why is Ticketmaster the only game in town when it comes to buying tickets for Taylor Swift or any major act, or minor act for that matter?
These are good questions.
Those questions, of course, are excellent questions, Marcus. Questions that have been asked for a long time. But I bring up something that I read oddly enough, on Twitter that will make you think for a second.
Yeah.
Ask this question: how many tickets did Ticketmaster actually have to sell?
Oh.
Let's just say it's an 80,000 seat stadium and there are 80,000 tickets to be sold. Do you think Ticketmaster had access to all 80,000 of those tickets? No.
I think not.
No. They only had access to a small percentage of those tickets. The rest went to brokers of the like to sell them at a markup. Who do you think was in charge of the ticket distribution, the split? Let's
Oh
just
boy.
say it's 20% Ticketmaster and 80% elsewhere.
Oh boy.
The artist. Why? Because the artist knows on the secondary market, because listen, the only way you make money as an artist nowadays is through ticket sales. You don't make it via record sales because nobody buys records anymore. Nobody's paying 99 cents to download a song from iTunes. Them days is as dead as Napoleon. So what these big artists do is they negotiate a deal with Ticketmaster. We'll give you a certain percentage. We'll take a certain percentage. Ticketmaster, you sell them the way you do it, all janky, and drop a bunch of unnecessary fees on top of the already exorbitantly priced tickets. We'll give you that certain percentage. Do what you want to do. Get yours, Ticketmaster. I, the artist, will take a percentage, and we will give let them go to brokers who will sell them well above face value. But the artist who gave the brokers the tickets will reap some of the benefits of
Yeah.
those tickets being sold at an exorbitant price on the secondary market. And what Ticketmaster does is they say, okay, we'll do that and we'll take the hit as the big bad corporate monopoly because nothing's going to happen and we'll do business in that way. Ticketmaster, who is awful, but Ticketmaster gives cover to the
The
artist
artist.
so they can make money on the secondary market, which is how the real change is made.
That's right.
Ain't that some dirty ass business?
Yeah, man. That's the game, right?
That's the
This is the
game,
game.
baby.
This is the game. There's always some extra shit going on that we don't
Oh,
really
yeah.
understand until we actually do some digging and somebody exposes it like that. But
Yeah,
you
the
had,
artist is not blameless, no.
you had to know this was the case. Because at least I know that at when I was running the club on a much smaller level, I know that artists set the prices of their tickets.
Yep.
So I know that this is a game, but that's really interesting. That's really interesting.
Okay, so can you speak on this, whether you have the knowledge or whether you can maybe violate some confidences? Dave Chappelle, when you ran the Punchline in San Francisco, Dave Chappelle would come by unannounced all the time, and he would do a run of shows, 3, 4, 5 days of shows at the Punchline. And it would be near impossible to get tickets. And the
That's right.
way average people would try to get tickets would be to go through Ticketmaster. Am I right?
That's
And
right.
then and it would be impossible because those tickets would sell out fast. And you would think, well, of course. Well, what was the capacity for the Punchline in San Francisco? 350?
No, not even that. It was 182.
Okay, so 182. So let's go ahead and round that up to 200, just to pick a easy number for a dumb guy like me. Do you know or can you tell how many of those tickets went to Ticketmaster to sell, and how many went and how many did Dave Chappelle's people give to the brokers for them to sell at a markup, and then they would reap the benefits of those tickets being sold at a higher price?
Okay, so in Dave's case, in the case of these comedy clubs, it's a little bit different because they wouldn't allow a secondary market.
Really? Okay.
No, they wouldn't, and that's primarily because the venue is just too small, and Dave specifically didn't want his tickets being sold, at that big old markup. So literally, if you not only did you have to buy your ticket, you have to show up with your ticket, and your name has to match the ticket. So when you come and pick up that ticket, you were only able to buy two tickets at a time. You had to show up with your ID, and the name on that ID has to match the name of the purchaser of the ticket. And then you had to come in once you got your ticket. Like, you couldn't take your ticket and go outside and hang out. You had to take your ticket and you had to go in and sit down.
Gotcha.
So and Dave set the price of his tickets. and he got all of it. But this is something you could do on a smaller scale in a small venue. He set the price to those tickets for entry, and then he took the money from the door.
So the bigger the venue, the more chances there is some shenanigans going on between the artist and Ticketmaster and third-party brokers.
Primarily because it's just a lot more difficult to control. Like, you can put controls in place in a small venue that will essentially shut down that secondary market. Once you start to get into these arenas, these 18,000, 60,000, 80,000 seat arenas, you pretty much have to accept the fact that these tickets are going to be sold in the secondary market, because there's no way you could really manage to have, you know, how much time it would take to have people show up and have 80,000 people show up to a concert and say, you have to verify these tickets with your name and ID. I mean, they just you couldn't do it.
So next time you hear an artist saying, "Oh, these scalpers, the secondary markets, the Vivid Seats and the StubHubs and all that, there's nothing we can do. Some way, somehow, these bots go through Ticketmaster and they get our tickets." They're lying. They
So
flat
hard.
out lying
So
to
hard.
you.
I want to get on this thing. I wanted to get into Dave Chappelle, but we're not going to have enough time. But I definitely want to talk about this thing in the juice segment we haven't done in a few weeks. But in Virginia, they've proposed a new K through 5 curriculum. The things that the Virginia Department of Education would like to take out of their learning curriculum.
Okay.
Racism.
Take it out. So
Yeah.
racism is dead?
Yeah. Juneteenth.
You mean the new federal holiday
Yeah.
that Black Emancipation
Yeah.
Day?
Yeah.
They want to
See,
take it out because
any references to Cesar Chavez?
what?
Yeah. The Americans with Disabilities Act. And they want to remove things about the women's rights movement.
So they want to remove things that have happened in this country.
Yes.
They want to remove that from the curriculum and not teach it.
But
So
get this.
they
Here's
want
what
to
they
whitewash
here's
history.
here's what they want in the
Okay.
curriculum.
Okay, lay it on me. I know what's gonna happen. They want to take all that stuff out and they want to make sure they get all the real good shit in. Okay, lay it on me. This is gonna be great.
They
Okay,
want
here we go.
to add in discussions about how the free market economy is essential to democracy. They want to add in a curriculum about the limited role of government. They want to have patriotic songs, and they want to have the, get this is my favorite, the entrepreneurial characteristics of early explorers. Wow. So this brings me to my bigger issue. Aren't these the guys who, for decades, have talked about how much they hate identity politics, but they traffic in it more than anybody? They don't want you to talk about race, but they definitely traffic in those types of politics when it comes to election time. You know, the Willie Horton story, that type of shit. Or they don't want to get the gays can't get married, all this shit. But they traffic in identity politics more than anyone and get mad when people respond to them trafficking in it, basically gaslighting Americans into going, oh no, the guys on the left, all they do is talk about race and sexuality and stuff like that, when they're the ones who always make it an issue.
I mean, well, we've known for years that the right wingers are hypocrites.
Oh man.
We've known that. I mean, that's as obvious and as transparent. And they don't care. They don't mind. You know, you
No.
call them on it because they're so craven and they're so disgusting that when they are presented with evidence that they are hypocritical, they go, "Yeah, so what are you gonna do about it?" What? It's
They get away with it.
None of this is surprising. This is a proposition. These are things that are being discussed. I'd like to know how far this goes. I call me naive, but I have a hard time seeing all of that the taking out of Juneteenth and references to Cesar Chavez and references to racism. I'd have a hard time seeing all that removed and all that idiocy. You just patriotic songs, like what the
Yeah.
what?
That we on some Third Reich type shit.
Well, I mean, yes, that's exactly what it is. I just as far gone as things seem in this country right now, and Virginia has themselves a Republican governor who is a world-class jackass, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I have a hard time seeing these things actually implemented. You can propose this all you want to, but implementing it, people are going to put up a fight. And there's enough black folk in Virginia that you're gonna have a hard time removing references to slavery and racism and Juneteenth. You're gonna have a hard time getting all of that taken out and having the entrepreneurial spirit of early American explorers being put up. I just
That's insane.
you can propose this shit all you want to, but actually getting it through, I need to see that happen.
Well, my worry isn't that people won't be outraged by it, because of course people will be outraged by it. My concern is that we've seen this over the past 25 years or so, and there was a great story about it, is how the hard right has mounted a concerted effort to take over things like the school board, and they're
Yes.
doing it very small timing, and they're managing to do this shit. So I'm like, who's going to stop them? Like, nobody's stopping these guys from doing this shit. And it seems like because politics is so local, and it's because people don't really pay attention to things like that until they get to a national stage, the damage will be done by the time people are sufficiently outraged by it.
Yeah, I again, I could see them getting away with this in districts that ain't got no black people. You're not gonna do this in Virginia Beach. It's not gonna happen. It's too many black people.
It's
You just
crazy.
you're not gonna do this. You're not gonna do this in Richmond. You're not going to do this in now my knowledge of where black people hang out in Virginia has just failed me, but you're not going to do this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You might be able to do this in some place where you don't have any black people. All right, fine. If that's how you want to get down, fine. That's how you want to get down. You don't much care for us anyway. You don't much care for our history. You don't much care for the history of this country and its treatment of black people. So whether you were being taught it or not, you still weren't going to learn from this country's terrible history when it comes to a treatment of people of color, specifically black people. But if you're going to try and push that shit where you do have black people, I don't see that happening. And yes, you have had over these past few years, you have had right-wing assholes try and infiltrate school boards and take over. But just like I told you in the last podcast, just like
Yeah.
we've talked about here over with the election, the midterm elections just ending, all of those people that have latched themselves to, and I hate to have to say it, that have latched themselves to Trumpism, they're losing. They have either lost or are in the process of losing. And it has happened with local school boards across the country too. Yeah, they tried, but when the light was shined on these cockroaches, they scurried away. Democracy works. So I'm these people are out here. These people are dangerous. I don't fear them because I still, and now I have evidence of it over the last couple of weeks with the election.
Yeah.
I still believe that when it comes down to it, people will do the right thing and get these clowns out using democracy. And we saw that with the midterm elections.
Yeah, that's always my hope, and I've always kind of felt like, well, this won't happen. This won't happen. And so often over the past 10 years, I'm like, wow, this shit really did happen. I can't believe this. That woke law that Ron DeSantis was pushing in Florida passed. It actually passed.
Yeah,
I can't fucking believe
Florida's like Texas. It's just a fucking crazy state.
it.
I mean, there are certain places. It's a wrap, dog. It's a wrap for Florida and Texas, man. That's just how they want to get down. What are you gonna do?
Yeah, I suppose you're right. So I just want to make sure we keep an eye on these types of things.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's frightening the stuff that these guys are getting away with.
All right, kids, that's another edition of your favorite podcast. It is a quality hang when your boys, Rod and Marcus, get together. My brother, have yourself a happy Thanksgiving.
Oh man, thank you. You enjoy one yourself,
Yeah,
brother.
you gonna do it in New Orleans?
Yeah, I'm gonna be here in NOLA. I was actually thinking about driving over to Little Rock and surprising the family.
Oh, you got to do that. Yeah, yeah, man, you got to do that, yeah. No doubt. And also eat real good.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Grandma, surprise, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Surprise me with some of that gobble gobble. Well, man, I hope you do that. And,
yeah, real talk.
And I hope it's a great Thanksgiving, my brother. I am extremely thankful. And I mean this, this is not just, this is not just podcast chatter. I'm extremely grateful for you, brother. I'm extremely grateful for you proposing that we do this, because it is one of the highlights of my week, my man. And yes, it has been fun, and it will continue to be fun, and it will continue to grow. So thank you, my brother. I love you, and I appreciate you.
Ditto, my man. You know how I feel about you. I love you a ton, and let's keep this thing rolling. Enjoy the fam. Tell everyone I said hello from your quality hang partner, and let's get back to it in a couple of weeks.
You got it, my brother. Safe travels. We'll talk, all right?
Be safe now.
All right, everybody. We know you're probably going to get this after Thanksgiving, but happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. We are thankful for all of you loyal quality hang listeners. Take care of yourselves. Be good, or be good at it.